Good morning. Welcome into In Focus on News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, back at the studio desk here after a few days off, and I've got Dr. Timothy Schaefer, who is joining us here. He's from the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy and an associate professor in the Department of Communications there at K-State. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, and glad we could get you on. Not your normal time here during the month, but you know, things have gotten kind of thrown about here with the holidays, so it's always timely when we get a chance to speak with you.
Yeah, no, it's really good to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to squeeze in this last bit of 2020 and what feels like the year that has gone on for a very long time. I'm glad to see it just about to turn the page.
Yeah, I think Dave was saying we are 39, just under 39 hours away from the new year.
38 hours, 52 minutes, and 3-2-1 mark.
Yeah, it feels that way. This has been, I mean, it's surreal. I was just the other day, we were looking at some photos of some travel that I had done at the beginning of the year before all of everything kind of shut down with the university and the things. And it almost felt surreal to look back, not even a year, and realize how differently it was really prior to feeling like we were going to be affected in any kind of dramatic way. And it's really significant that, you know, we've collectively had to be dealing with what we are. Some people very intimately, personally, just yesterday getting a word from a few more friends that I know I haven't seen for a little while, but testing positive for COVID and feeling the effects, and just being very hopeful for them and also for collectively for us, as we're here on the cusp of knowing that a lot of doctors and nurses and other medical staff and personnel are getting their first round of shots and the vaccines, and looking forward to a return to normalcy for myself and for everybody else. So I'm really hopeful for 21. 2020 can go away.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it's so interesting here because the COVID-19 pandemic, I think, really shined a light on how polarizing our politics can be. And I think we already knew that going into the pandemic. But, boy, even more so now. I don't know if we've ever been more split on the way people get their news or get their information about politics. It's really shined a light, I think, on just how polarizing we are.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a few layers to unpack. I mean, so one, yes, the kind of the polarization, as we talk about it typically, of the kind of left and right ideologically kind of either fixed or fluid positions, I think has been very apparent. And we've continued to see it even in recent days as some of that has become slightly more complicated as President Trump made some calls for further stimulus, for checks for people, and somewhat and the Republican Party kind of going with him and others not kind of holding more of the line that you would expect. But it's been an interesting moment for that, but also for, you know, which again, 2020, for the year that it's been, some of it feels long and maybe long ago, but the factors of our kind of institutional dimensions being really challenged and strained in multiple ways, that we're still truly feeling the effects of our election, a general election from early November. It's not technically quite over, and there's still just a story yesterday, for example, of the kind of contestation of some of the electors and counting their votes in the Electoral College on the 6th of January. So these kinds of things are still kind of reverberating, which have some lasting effects. And when we lay that on top of truly a global pandemic, but one that has really hit the United States very hard, partly because of some of this polarization, we've kind of created conditions that have made some of our collective response rather challenging. And there have been some efforts, for example, here in Kansas, a number of organizations have partnered together to facilitate discussions in local communities. The Kansas Leadership Center, for example, has really led the charge and reached out to partners across the state, all sorts of organizations and individuals, to talk about how do we respond to this? Not so much to say, here's the blueprint for you to follow, but how do we have those those local discussions to figure out how do we balance the tensions that exist between things like public health and collective concern and individual kind of rights and some autonomy and things like that. And realizing that's going to vary to some degree from place to place. Because I think there's some real truth to that, that if we just have, here's a kind of a flat kind of mandate, everybody has to do this, here's certain kind of penalties if you don't do it, that may be fair, or it may be the most impactful, but the response from a lot of folks will not necessarily be positive. And so I'd rather have, as I was talking to somebody the other day, the kind of efficacy of masks, right? If you're wearing a mask, it may not be 100%, but it's better than zero if you're not doing anything. And so how do we find the place to where we can accommodate some of that diversity of thought and kind of approach, and at the same time recognize that we are in this together. And this has been one of those moments that we have realized, back to your point earlier about polarization, is that we're in a time where that's our default position largely. And that doesn't work when we have a collective problem. And I think that's one of the lessons learned that many scholars, but also practitioners, are thinking a lot about, is how do we really acknowledge that this is a collective, complex, wicked problem. And we need to respond to an address that requires both experts, but also ordinary folks who have either knowledge and experience and also comments to help inform and shape what we are doing.
We're speaking with Dr. Timothy Schaefer here, joining us from K-State, associate professor in the Department of Communications, and with the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy, you're the director, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I've been in that role now for, I guess, officially just about half a year. Our longtime director, David Proctor, stepped down from that role, and he's been on sabbatical, and he'll be back gratefully next semester, which will be wonderful to have him back around, at least via Zoom meetings, I guess. So the Institute has been, you know, in existence for about 15 years, a little bit more, and has long been committed to this idea of kind of helping create conditions for conversations that address, even what we said at its founding, well before I was here, was our kind of contentious, polarized politics. And we've seen it only kind of exacerbate in certain ways. And the reality is that the need, both on our campuses at, say, K-State, for example, but also in our communities across the state and beyond, we need greater skills and capacities to do this. And so I've been very grateful for the opportunity to be part of ICDD and to work with a lot of folks on campus and across the state. We have some really close collaborations with Kansas Research and Extension. For example, that's a great partnership, something that we're really launching some efforts going into the new year together, because we need to be able to find ways for us to constructively engage our shared problems. And this is not a new challenge, but it's exacerbated and frankly more complicated now, given the limitations of our abilities to get together in person, feeling, you know, for public health and safety reasons. And also, as you noted a few moments ago, the sense of division among people is really challenging. And that's a really unfortunate reality when we do all have to live together. But the Institute has played interesting roles in 2020. We've done some of the things that we would routinely do. It was an election year, and we are the home for a lot of the election efforts. And so getting people on the list, so to speak, to be able to vote in their respective states, in Kansas and elsewhere, and also instructing people about how to cast votes, especially this year, given the kind of multiplicity of options that many of them have been around, but not necessarily used by a lot of folks. And so the mail-in ballots, for example, where to drop in off, their ballots early, the locations, things like that. And so ICDD, with a number of campus partners, really led that charge at the university. And I'm really glad that we did. I think that's an important role. Democracy requires people to be involved. It should be fair and inclusive. And voting, even for the most minimal of acts, is an essential foundation building block for the more active engagement that we hope to foster.
You know, it's interesting. I came across something about a week or so ago. Do you know a woman named Vanessa Oteros by chance?
I don't believe so.
Okay. She started up this company. I think she's out of Colorado. It's basically created a media watchdog company for political bias in news coverage. And I think, you know, that has been evident. We've talked about it a lot here, you and I, in the past. But she's, I think, the creator of that that chart that we see where you can go see which, you know, where media outlets fall on the timeline.
Yeah.
And that's go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, no, I mean, those things are essential. The understanding of where we get information, what do we trust, how do we trust it? It's one of those kind of, we talk about it as like media literacy, and civic literacy is an essential piece, especially as we're turning the page here in one of our chapters of American civic life to a new one with a new administration. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with Congress and the Senate, for example, in those two races in Georgia. But it presents another moment in our history, which in some ways, I think, changes the landscape a bit of media bias and information, where people are getting it. For example, there have been some new kind of surprise, I don't want to say startups, but kind of emerging smaller entities emerging on the ideological right, even to the right of, say, Fox News, for example, that have become kind of darlings in some ways. And there's a question about, you know, what element of this is editorial, what part of is news, and these kinds of things. And all of that across the spectrum is a critical piece when we are continuing to confront a whole host of challenges, not just COVID-19, right? It's a lot of layers. And the idea of how do we come to know, what do we know, what do we trust, is a huge factor. And again, this is where I know I've said it to you and I've said it to Dave in the past of thinking about some of the local challenges that we've had here in the region. We've had flooding and the like. Of having trustworthy news sources becomes a really important thing that doesn't get kind of editorialized in ways that may be interesting or in kind of enjoyable or for an entertainment value reason. But there are times when it's kind of like dry toast, right? It's not always the most flavorful, but it really is the essential nutrients. And there's something about that. And so I really appreciate the work. And I'm not saying you're boring, but what I am saying is that you don't add lots of extra layers or your own kind of perspective. And I think that's a really important thing, especially when so much of our media consumption, with the loss of other local media, is kind of colored through that lens of the more editorial or the conflation of the editorial and the news reporting side into one thing.
Yeah, it's so important. It's so important to decipher between what is and what isn't editorial, because it seems to be the path is narrowing here between them. I got to take a quick break. We'll come back, though. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Schaefer in a moment. You're listening to News Radio KMAN's In Focus.